fly. Tonight, live from the studios of Q107 in Toronto, Canada, we welcome Rush to speak with the band. Call the toll-free Rock Line at 1-800-344-ROCK. That's 1-800-344-7625. And now, a man who lives his life in the limelight, Bob Coburn.
Somebody's got to be there. The long-awaited new album by Rush hit stores yesterday. Exciting and compelling upon first listen, Vapor Trails really begins to reveal itself upon repeated listens and at high volume as well. And Rockline is always pleased to welcome Alex Lifeson. Nice to see you tonight.
Hey, Bob.
Nice to see you, Getty.
Hey, nice
Getty
to be here.
Getty joining us as well. And a pleasure to be in your hometown of Toronto tonight at the studios of Q107. Nice to see you in your home environment here.
Thank you.
We welcome you here, eh?
It's nice. It was beautiful here today. And thanks for throwing in the A. Then you want to talk a little hockey while we're here?
Yeah,
it was
very beautiful yesterday. Speak a little Canadian while you're here.
The Leafs go.
City was rocking last night.
It sure was.
Yeah, that's good. I love that. Do either of you feel that Vapor Trails is reminiscent of any earlier Rush album, and why or why not?
Well, there's something about the energy of this record and something about the passion of it, to me anyway, that reminds me of two other records that we've done. One is 2112. I mean, obviously the music is quite different, but the intensity is reminiscent to me of that record. And also Permanent Waves. There's a optimism that exists on Permanent Waves and a freshness, a liveliness of playing that I think has a lot in common with this record.
Now, well, on Permanent Waves, the song The Spirit of Radio, wasn't that based on a radio program here in Toronto?
Yeah, there was a station years ago that played whatever it felt like playing.
I love that.
It was kind of inspiring at the time, and it basically, we used it as a starting off point for speaking about how radio was when FM first came in, where there were DJs that actually played music according to their tastes and hoped that their fans liked it. And there was a whole sense of freedom about it and how that's what radio really is supposed to be.
Alex, I mentioned in the introduction listening to Vapor Trails repeatedly a few times, and it really does open up a little bit. Was that the case for you, moving away from the studio and in that situation and being in a different environment? Did you hear the layers and the texture open up upon repeated listens?
Absolutely. This record took us 14 months to record, to write and record. We were so inside of it. Mixing the record was very tough. It's always just tough to mix a record. That's where your final decisions are all made. And you're hearing it for the first time in all its glory. For me, I needed to get away for a couple of weeks before I could listen to it objectively. I remember listening to it once right after we finished mastering and thinking, oh, you know, there's so many things here that need to be done. And then I got away from it. I was in Hawaii. My wife and I went to Hawaii for 2 weeks. We celebrated our 27th anniversary. And
congrats.
Thank you. And it was really nice to you know, get away and relax and clear my head. And the one day just before we left, I sat on the beach and I put it on headphones, and I was so relieved. I listened to all the songs, you know, and it was the first time I actually heard the songs on the record.
And kind of a whew. Oh yeah,
yeah. Absolutely, it was.
In 14 months, Getty, is that a long period of time or a short amount of time for Rush to work on an album?
That's a very long period of time for us. Usually, even in our worst moments, no more than 6 months. Usually for us, it's like we spend about 8 weeks writing and then about 10 weeks recording, and boom, we're done. So this was a very, very different kind of project.
We'll begin with the song One Little Victory from Vapor Trails by Rush. Does this song represent a victory for the band?
Yeah, I think it does. It starts the record. The one thing I really love about it is the fact that Neil's starting it off. You know, says so much, I think, about being back there after 5 years of being sort of out of the loop. And it celebrates the, you know, the little victories in our lives.
I know Neil himself, in the biography, used an old line that's certainly appropriate. They're back! And here they are on Rockline. Joining us tonight from Q107 in Toronto. And if you'd like to talk to him, just call the toll-free Rockline at 1-800-344-ROCK, 1-800-344-7625. 344-ROCK, and we have Tim on the line, and Tim is listening to our Pittsburgh affiliate. Hello. Hi, Tim. How are you?
Hi, BC. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Getty and Alex are here.
Hello, Getty.
Hi, Tim.
How are
Hi.
You?
Hi.
Hello, Alex.
How are you?
Very well. Go Leafs, go, eh?
Yeah.
What's your question, Tim?
Yes. I wanted to ask you guys, Getty and Alex, maybe you could each answer. What's the relationship between the title, Vapor Trails, which is the new album, and like the album cover? Like, what's the inspiration behind both of them?
Well, to me, I mean, obviously, all album artwork is open to personal interpretation, but for me, it represents the burning fire of life, and there's this ball of fire, obviously, on the cover. It's a beautiful painting, and off of it come sparks and trails and whispers and whatever you want to call them, and those are very symbolic to me. They represent, memory. They represent spirit. All sorts of things that, are connected to life.
Mm-hmm. And the things that we leave behind.
Oh, great way to put it. In choosing a title for the album, you chose a song this time. What discussion was there about that, Alex?
Well, we had a few names up on the board, and that's the one that kind of sang out to us.
Yeah, it's the one that rang the most true. And also, I think you're not only looking for something that sounds right, but it also sparks a particular visual potential.
Mm-hmm.
And that one certainly did.
And just putting the S on the end of it made a lot of difference.
Yeah. And as much as we liked Stupid Rush, it didn't seem right at the time.
Thank goodness for that. And from their album Stupid Rush, this is Rush.
It was our second favorite.
We're very close, huh? Hey, Tim, thanks for joining us tonight. It's Skip's turn as we head to Maryland. You're on Rockline, Skip.
Hi, guys. How you doing?
Good, Skip.
We're good.
First of all, I wanted to mention before my question, I should probably apologize to you guys. I'm actually the webmaster for RushPetition.com, so I apologize for nagging me to dust off and relearn all those old tunes. But anyway, my question has to do with how you guys seem to maintain such normal lives despite the madness of being in a rock band. Specifically, I'd kind of like to know, I know that typically Rush is very protective of, your personal lives. But I'm just curious, to know how you guys have maintained such solid family lives through 30 years of touring, especially back in the 70s when you were playing, 200-plus shows per year. I know you've all, been married for 30 years and whatnot. And I'm wondering how you pulled that off.
Well, not without difficulty, I'll tell you.
Yeah, I bet.
Marriage, I've said many times, you think making a record is tough? Marriage is the single toughest thing any human being can endeavor to do right. Of course, we've had our difficult moments, especially in those years you described where we were away so much. But we're all good Canadian boys, and we're very polite. And, we give our spouses, I suppose, the benefit of the doubt, and we allow them to yell at us and, take out their frustrations on us when they need to. And I don't know. There's something about the way we were brought up. I suppose we have, kind of solid middle-class values. We all believe in raising kids, and somehow we've escaped the madness and the over-excess that I think strikes a lot of musicians when they're in the same situation. I can't really tell you why we're like that. I think it's just something about the way we were brought up.
We also have spouses that are funny and intelligent and fun to be with. Independent, strong, wonderful people.
And humor is the great equalizer, isn't it?
Yeah, sure it is.
That's just the buffer that makes it all work, I think.
Yeah.
That's the glue that helps keep it together. Thanks for the call, Skip, and I think they'll forgive you for the website.
My fingers won't, but
wait till you see our petition that's coming out.
There we are. We're going to play one of Rush's classics right now. This is Fly By Night on Rockline. Coming, yeah. How long has it been since you heard that, Alex?
A while.
You're going to hear it a lot soon.
Yes. Maybe, maybe not.
Title track of the 1975 release by Rush and Bob Coburn with Alex and Getty tonight. Dino is on the line in Macon, Georgia. Welcome to Rockline, Dino.
Hey, how you guys doing this evening?
We're good, Dino.
I've got two questions. One is for Getty, and another one is for Rush in general. Question for Getty. Outside of My Favorite Headache, do you have any other solo works that might be available for us?
No, actually, that's the first time I've attempted to do something like that. There are, I've played with people through the years occasionally, like doing bass on some track or backing vocals. Aside from my comedy work with Bob and Doug McKenzie,
that's right, yeah.
Hey.
That's about all I've done, and this was a great experience for me. I really enjoyed doing it, and I hope I can do it again sometime.
And there's Wireless and the Boys Brigade album.
Yeah, that's right. I did some producing through the years as well.
Rocket Science. And the other question?
Yes, I would like to ask you guys if you have ever considered or will you consider doing any film work or a videography, so to speak, for 2112?
Film work. Well, you mean in terms of writing for film or
a Rush film?
A Rush film around 2112.
Oh, you want to make a movie, don't you, Dino?
Yeah. Right on. Well, you know, it's funny. It's something that once in a while the idea of filming that comes up, and we've never really taken it very far. We usually get distracted with something else, and it's possible. You never know. I think it would be an interesting film, quite frankly.
Now, Getty, when you did the solo album, My Favorite Headache, and a lot of lyric writing, and how did that come to you?
Well, it was trial by fire, really. You know, I started writing some music with Ben Mink, and a lot of the stuff was coming along pretty well, and obviously we needed some lyrics. And so I started keeping a journal, and I started writing phrases down and just thoughts down and things that I would be discussing with myself, and I would just start fleshing them out and shaping them around what vocal melodies I would come up with, and I found it really incredibly satisfying in some way to write a melody that I could shape the lyrics so finely with.
Mm-hmm. While we're on the topic of lyrics, let's talk briefly about Neil Peart, lyricist, drummer for the band. How is he? What's going on with him? I know he's not doing really any interviews. I think he did something for a drum magazine that was kind of a tech-oriented thing.
Yeah, modern.
How is Neil? Is he okay?
He's doing really well. He's doing what we should be doing right now, rehearsing.
so he's the one.
So he's going to be in better shape than we are. He's doing really well. He's turned a corner in his life, and things are getting more and more positive for him. But when it came time to do promotion and things like that for this album, he just wasn't quite ready yet to face the inevitable questions that would be, for him, quite emotional to deal with. So.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps at some future time he'll be able to do that kind of thing. So we just said, that's fine. You know, we'll just do all the blabbering, so don't worry about it.
Well, you do it well. Got a really good question for Getty and Alex tonight? Then call us toll-free, 1-800-344-ROCK. I'm Bob Coburn. You're listening to Rockline on the Premier Radio Network. Chris, your turn to be on Rockline. Good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening. Hi, Chris.
Alex and Getty, I have a question for each of you. And I was wondering, first of all, what your favorite song is to play live. And then second, for Mr. Lifeson, on your website for Rush, it says that somehow you managed to eat $19,000 worth of cheese in one single afternoon. I wondered what that's all about.
You didn't have to ride in the car with him afterwards.
Yeah, it was in the morning, and it was only $18,000. It was
always,
all soft cheeses.
You always exaggerate.
Those people, those writers.
My favorite song live, I think, maybe it's Bravado. Song, I love singing it, and I never get tired of it.
I'm glad to hear you say that, because that's one of my favorite Rush songs ever.
Yeah, me too.
There's just something magical about it. Alex, what about you? What works for you?
Definitely, for me, on the last tour, was Natural Science. It was a very challenging song to play live. It's a very dynamic song. It goes through a lot of different things.
Mm-hmm.
You really have to be on your toes to play it well. And that was a real reward every night when we played it well.
I didn't see you once playing that song on your toes. I have to tell you.
You know, when I think of Rush songs, there's really not anything you can play just on cruise control, though, is there?
No.
I mean, you've got to really keep, keep your head in the game, don't you?
Yeah, you drift off, and there's a train wreck coming.
Yeah, we've had a few.
That has happened. Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
there's usually one or two good train wrecks every tour.
Yeah,
it's bound to happen with music that intricate. Hey, thanks for joining us tonight, Chris. We're going to talk to Jay right now as we head to Portland, Oregon. Welcome to Rockland. Jay, you're on with Rush.
D.C., what a treat.
Hey, thank you.
What a treat. Alex and Getty, great hearing from you guys.
Thanks,
Jay.
What's the biggest obstacle in being a three-piece band? And I got another question for you. If you answer that one, or do you want the...
Okay, shall we answer that one first?
Let's go with that one first.
What's the biggest obstacle? I don't know. I don't think
there is one, really. You know, we've been very happy working as a three-piece band for all these years. Everything's quite rewarding in terms of writing and performing.
Yeah, I would say if there's anything that's difficult, it's when you go in the studio and you want to keep a basic three-piece format and you're making a record, and then you do the inevitable get carried away with a little bit of overdubbing, and then trying to fill that sound in live sometimes is a little difficult. But we usually figure out a way to do it, but if there's an obstacle, that's probably the only one I could think of.
But you make up for it with that extra slice of pepperoni pizza.
And that other pound of cheese.
Yeah, exactly.
That always comes in handy.
Now, you know I love cheese.
Always cheese with him.
I brought that up one night with you, and we kind of glossed that over, didn't we?
Yes, we did.
I want to talk about cheese. What's the other question, Jay?
The other question was, well, now that you guys make the superstar status, what's the hardest obstacle in, let's say, holding on to the fortune or fame? What's the hardest part about doing that? And the reason why I said the thing with the three-piece is we're a three-piece and I'm a drummer. I just can imagine you guys back 30 years ago, did you give Neil a big hand hauling that drum set around from club to club? Because that's the only thing our obstacle we find is without a singer, that's that extra guy to haul the equipment around.
Yeah, you're right. That's a good thought.
Yeah.
And pragmatic.
Why didn't I think of that?
We need a singer.
The biggest obstacle, I mean, your life is what it is. Our success has come slowly, and we focused more on our making our music and trying to survive being on the road and keep our families together. And I think that because of the fact that it happened slowly for us, we were able to grow with it in stages, and we don't take it for granted, and none of us are over the top in terms of our lifestyle. We have our indulgences for sure, but I don't know if there's any real obstacle to it. I mean, at one time I used to think that the loss of privacy was a terrible price to pay, but you know, I've gotten accustomed to it, and I find now when I meet people or fans on the street, they're really pretty nice, and if I'm nice back to them, the whole encounter goes by very smoothly and it's over in a few seconds. So I don't know, and I get better tables at restaurants, so that's a good thing.
I've known you both a while now, and it seems to me that the fortune and fame aspect of it's just an addendum, and it's really about making good music for you, isn't it?
Yeah, truly it is. It always has been. That's really what we get the biggest charge from.
Speaking of good music, how it is, brand new.
I'm a sucker for the tuneful ones, but this song came together kind of in an instant way. We did this jam, and one part of the jam, there was a few interesting chords that kept repeating, but so I took them from this jam and I assembled them in a way where they repeated, but they repeated irregularly, and it was kind of an experiment for me if I could put a whole different vocal melody revolving around the same chords, but the fact that they were repeating irregularly made them feel like there were a lot more chords than just those few chords. And it was successful, and the melody turned out very innocent and kind of pure, and there's something about it that really strikes a chord with me.
How it is, it's Rush on Rockline. A lot of Rush fans have already run out to the CD shop and picked up one, I have a feeling. We'll see how that works out. Back to the phones we go. I'm Bob Coburn with Geddy Lee and Alex Lyson. Your number is toll-free, 1-800-344-ROCK, the number that Tom called in the Nashville area. Welcome to the show, Tom.
Yes, a couple of quick questions. Who will be the opening bands for the upcoming tour, if any? And second question, Alex, how did you end up playing Little Drummer Boy on Merry Axmas, a Guitar Christmas?
As far as the opening acts go, we're going to be very self-indulgent on this tour and not have an opening act.
Yes!
I know that some people like to have an opening act, and I apologize to those people, but because of that guy on the webmaster who did the petition for Rush, we got too many songs to play now. So we need about, I'm blaming you, we need about 3 hours worth of music to cover everything, and it's still not going to cover everything we want to play, so we'll do two sets and with an intermission, and that's going to be the format of the next tour.
Best thing.
With the Merry Axmas compilation, a number of guitarists were approached to do Christmas music that was guitar-based, but really it wasn't necessarily guitar-based. You could do whatever you wanted. I chose that song. It just seemed like an interesting approach to a traditional Christmas carol, and I approached it in more of a almost a that Western sort of bonanza kind of guitar presence, a big guitar with big giant strings, if you can imagine. It was really a lot of fun to do. I did that at home, recorded at home in my home studio late over a couple of nights. It's a lot of fun.
Do you, when you make those choices, Alex, do you just go from the heart? Do you intellectualize it? What do you do?
Yeah, actually, it's just from the heart. It's I think very little about what I'm doing.
That's clear.
You know, I don't overthink it, is what I'm saying. And
exactly. Yeah.
I don't like to. I wish I could do that with my golf game, because that's my problem with my golf game. I think about it too much, but it seems with my guitar playing, anyways, I don't really clutter myself. I'm very natural with it.
Now, Alex is completely instinct when he plays in studio. We're both completely different approaches to writing. It's really interesting, and I think that's why we've been so successful as writing partners all these years. We have such a different attitude about it, and when we can make it work together, it's just it's really a blend of two wildly divergent attitudes.
And that's when it works too. Thanks for joining us, Rick. Tom. We're going to talk to Rick right now. Rick is in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Welcome to Rockline, Rick.
Thank you. Good evening, Getty and Alex.
Good evening.
Ooh.
I have a question for you. Rush has been considered an inventive thinking man's hard rock band. Do you agree with that perception of you guys?
Well, I think that's a complimentary epithet for us. I don't know. It's hard for me to know what we really are. I don't possess the necessary objectivity about what we do to make that judgment, really. I think that's almost for somebody else to say, but are we thinking men? Yes. Are we a rock band? Yes. Some of our music is more successful, obviously, than others. Some of it is, tries to be a little more intelligent than others. Some of it is pure instinct, so I don't know. Do you have a vibe about that?
No.
That's because you don't want to think about it too much.
I think you're right in what you say. We are all those things, I think. We do care about what we do. We think about what we do. We like to provide something that maybe is food for thought, a little thought-provoking in our music.
But the intent of the music is not to sit down and think
and
about
be serious.
It. And,
no, exactly.
I mean, there should be enough spirit in what you're hearing that you can just be carried away by it. That's what music's supposed to be, I think. When the thinking becomes, too demanding, then it's taking some of the fun out of the music.
Now, I read a piece that Neil had written, and I consider myself pretty well read, and I'm looking at some of the inspirations, just a line or two, or a series of words that Neil has taken from other people that ended up in songs and Vapor Trails, and some of those references, I look at them and go, who are these people?
Well, he's a pretty well-read guy.
Yeah, apparently
I mean,
so.
You're talking about a seriously well-read guy. In fact, he's read probably over 100 books, some of them without pictures.
Oh my gosh! And some of them don't have letters that are 4 inches tall. Yeah. My goodness. Is he the most voracious reader in the band, do you think?
Oh yeah, by far.
Yeah.
I mean, he can't stop. I mean, it's just the way he's always been. It's one thing we noticed about him when we first went on that very first tour, and he would been in the band just for a couple weeks before we were boom out on tour in America, and we didn't really know each other. And the first thing you had to notice about him was that he always had a book in his hand. And he was very inspiring to us. I think in that way that in a way, he taught us that you can escape into books so easily.
We're going to play Where's My Thing for a couple of reasons. One reason, what is the trilogy thing with Rush? With
I don't know.
Number one released third, and number three released, and four parts to the trilogies. It's just having fun, I guess, huh?
We just can't add.
We're never good in math, that's for sure.
Read a lot of books, but could never work the calculator.
Yeah, right.
and the other reason that I want to play this song tonight is the interplay between the three of you, I think, really highlights the great musicianship in the band. Do you feel that when you're playing? I mean, that kind of intuitive feel, working off each other and knowing where the other person is going to be, and then something magical like this happens. Do you get a
absolutely.
Sense of that when you play?
Yeah. When it's going good, absolutely. I mean, we have times where we're just not very in sync, but when we've been playing together a lot, there's a lot of that goes down. And sometimes when we jam at sound checks, it's unbelievable how that we're all kind of grooving, and in a way we're writing a song together and we're not even talking about it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's years and years and years of knowing the way each other plays and trying to imagine where, instinctively imagine. I mean, you're not, you know, your brain isn't saying, oh, he's going here now. You just kind of know he's going there and you go there.
Just feel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Particularly between Getty and Neil. Because I know for me, just standing outside of them when they're in sync like that, it's really amazing. It is like they're playing a song they'd rehearsed many, many times.
Mm-hmm.
And it allows me to just play around it because of their tightness.
And as we know, guitar players never listen to the rhythm section anyway. So it all works out pretty well.
Oh, a couple of shots being taken here tonight. I love it. Let's go back to 1991, the Roll to Bones album, Where's My Thing? It's Rush on Rockline. Contact and some eyes kind of bouncing around. Follow the bouncing eye. You're looking at each other while that was playing. Bring on the challenges. We have Kurt on the line. He is in Lombard, Illinois, right outside Chicago. Welcome to Rockline, Kurt.
How you doing, BC? Alex, Getty?
Very well.
I just wanted to say, I don't know about anybody else listening, but I hope that little tidbit you just played is going to be included on this tour, because I have seats for 7 shows so far. And,
Oh my God.
Cannot wait, you guys.
You could get arrested for that.
Wait. I'm sorry?
You could get arrested for going to 7 shows.
Illegal in 23 states and 4 provinces, yeah.
You know, I'm in Chicago, and I'm dating a girl in Toronto, and thank God, because she hooked me up for the show up there, and I'm going to see in Hartford, and the first 2 shows, Chicago, Milwaukee, St. Louis, and Indy. So I can't wait, guys.
Thank you so much.
You are great.
And you guys are awesome. Anyways, 2 quick questions. Freeze on Vapor Trails. Was that originally intended to be an instrumental, and how did lyrics work their way into it? And Getty, it was great meeting you at Rolling Stone Records. Thank you so much for signing the Neon Signs. And Alex, if I could somehow get you and Neil on those, it'd make my life, man. Thanks a lot, guys.
Well, thanks for your question and your sentiments. And 7 shows, my God.
Yeah. And he'll go to more if he gets
more than that's more than I'm going to.
What was the question? Okay, Freeze. Yeah, Freeze began as a jam. Alex and I had this glorious 2 weeks where we were just so locked in and we were jamming, and there were so many good moments from this jam that I think we ended up with about 4 or 5 songs out of that 2 week period, all from little spontaneous tidbits. I don't think it was intended as an instrumental originally. I think when we did this jam, we sat down afterwards and started playing with the arrangement and putting it into a really kind of unusual shape. And I think the intention always was to use lyrics, and we had these lyrics that we really liked called Freeze, and they just connected, I think. So it came together, I think, in a relatively short period of time,
mm-hmm.
didn't it?
Yeah, all the parts were pretty much intact when they were all sort of glued together.
Mm-hmm.
It's a long song. One of the longest songs we've written in a while, actually.
Yes.
Over 7 minutes.
Yeah.
Are you taking care of Kurt, or do you have another question?
Actually, it was just that, and you guys went back to instrumentals, and you didn't have one on this one. Obviously, there's so much music on this album, and by the way, some of your best work ever. I am in love with this CD.
Oh,
thank you.
Well, funnily enough, Peaceable Kingdom was slated to be an instrumental, and Paul Northfield, when he came into the project, suggested to us that maybe we'd want to consider putting lyrics to it. He felt that it was a very strong song and would benefit from having a strong lyrics.
Yeah, and I'm glad he did, because it turned out to be just about my favorite song.
Yeah, same here.
We will try to play that before the evening is over with Getty and Alex and Rush. We're going to play essentially the title track on the album right now. This is Vapor Trail for you on Rockline. Joe.
How you doing? I have a question about the Moving Pictures album. How you came up with the idea and why there wasn't a song called Moving Pictures on the album?
Well, how we came up with the idea for the album, do you mean?
Yeah.
The album or the album cover?
The album cover.
The album cover.
Okay, great. Well, I think the title came from the fact that there was a collection of songs about various things, and at that point we were thinking very cinematically about our music, and all those songs were kind of little vignettes or little movies to us. And that's something we learned from Terry Brown, this producer that we first worked with for the first 10 years of our life, or 10 albums. And he always had a very visual approach to making music. And I think we absorbed that from him. And there were always soundtracks to movies that didn't exist. And I think with moving pictures, there, I think we always viewed it as, you know, a collection of little vignettes. And Neil came up with the title Moving Pictures. Because of the pun on moving, the double entendre. Mm-hmm. And anyway, and Hugh came up with this concept of a film within a film, or a movie shoot within a movie shoot, and played upon the comedy of moving pictures and all that. So that's the best of my record.
Yeah, and the photographs taken by Deborah Samuels in the inside sleeve were done in sequence like that as well.
Mm-hmm.
To symbolize the moving pictures as well.
Yeah, it's all a play on the words, yeah. The word moving, and the songs in the sense of emotionally moving, of course, and the joke of it, I guess, is the fact that there's these moving guys.
The physical part, yeah, yeah,
yeah.
It's like physical
moving
comedy,
pictures.
You know.
Yeah, yeah. And what an album. Seven songs, but seven amazing songs. Seven of the best songs of your career in that album. I could listen to Red Barchetta about eight times in a row and just hit the repeat button and let it go.
Yeah, it's funny, you know, when we put a tour together and we put our initial set list, we look back and go, well, wait a second, we've got like six songs from Moving Pictures here, and we're missing some other albums. It's really hard for us not to play a lot of those Moving Picture songs, uh-huh, because
yeah,
they're all so satisfying, and I know people love to hear them. But
it was a treat making that record too. We had a really great time making that record.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we talked about the artwork a bit on Moving Pictures. Do any of you keep the original artwork for these albums? Not just that one, but the Rush collection.
Some of them I've ended up, you know, Neil has some of them. I think I have some of the original slides from Show of Hands, all those really cool kind of deconstructivist cartoons. I don't know. I think there's some at our office.
Yeah, Power Window Painting is at the office.
Well, somebody needs to grab that stuff and put it in a really great place. So, all right, Rockline listeners, we have your passage to Bangkok for you. It's Rush on Rises. Hi, Adam.
Hi, Bob. How are you doing? Hi, Getty and Alex. How are you guys doing tonight?
We're great, thanks.
Hi, I just wanted to ask you, are you guys going to be filming a DVD for your upcoming tour by any chance?
I have no idea yet. It's a bit early to tell. We got to get the tour out there and working, and I imagine at some point we'll inevitably be pressured into filming it and mixing it. So I would stay tuned. I can't really give you an answer on that right now.
I'll loan you a camera.
That's right. I'm sure there'll be a lot of personal DVDs being
yeah,
made.
Yeah. I saw somebody in performance one night, and somebody was taping them, and they leaned down and said, how do we sound tonight? Are we doing okay? Apparently so. Hey, Adam, thanks for joining us tonight. If you're a Rush fan, this is a treat, and we can't play all the way through, but why not the Overture and Temples of Syrinx from 2112? It's Rush on Rockline. We talked about that a little bit earlier. Both of you like that song a lot. Can you verbalize why? Why does it hit both of you out of curiosity? Alex?
I just love the dynamics of the song. It goes from this in-your-face, very powerful verse, a bridge, into this beautiful, lush chorus, and the sentiment of the lyrics are just very, very moving to me.
Good. Yeah, to me it's so unusual. There's a certain grittiness where the guitar and bass are working exactly in concert together, and it came from a jam, and a lot of it is very live, you know, untouched from the original. But we're moving together, and it's guitar and bass are almost like one sound on this song, and I really like the grittiness of it.
One we didn't get a chance to play is Ceiling Unlimited, which is a personal favorite of mine from Vapor Trails, and there's just something about that song that's haunting, very melodic and very Rush-like at the same time. You can hear all of it on the brand new CD Vapor Trails. It's in stores now. The band is about to embark on tour once they get that little rehearsal thing out of the way.
Yeah.
There's always that.
Small point.
Yeah.
Just a small plane.
Yeah, you know, you'll get over that very quickly. I want to thank everyone for listening and for calling tonight, and, of course, to our affiliate stations as well. Many thanks to Ray Daniels.